Hey, y'all, welcome back to Erase the State. I'm back in studio with Mikey Two Names and a special guest. Ricky, what's up, brother?
Hey, man, how you doing? Nice to be on with y'all.
Doing great. Did I say Ricky or Rocky?
Ricky, but it's Rocky. It's,
fuck. It's fine. Okay, well, all right. That's the kind of content you get on this show. So
very similar.
So, Rocky, you're kind of popping your podcast cherry with us tonight. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What's going on with you, man?
Yeah, just here with my buddy. I've been I guess the best way to describe it is a monk or a religious for the past 3 years. Decided that's not what I wanted to do. Now I'm looking at a couple different endeavors, so here I am.
So you have your hair back, so not full-blown monk anymore. tell me how you got into the world of monkery, monkdom.
Yeah, that's a great question. The funny thing is, there's a whole field or whatnot this is Catholicism and sure. These different religious orders. So what I was involved in was a religious community that started in the year 1216. So a few years back, 800 years back.
Dominican?
Nice.
Yeah. So I've been, their charism is preaching, and most of their members become ordained Catholic priests. And that was the track that I was on. It was a completely interesting experience, to say the least. For me personally, I've always been like a spiritual type person, relatively involved in Catholic Christianity most of my life. And I just was like, maybe I'm called to take these vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience and serve my Christian community as a spiritual leader. And I sought out this particular organization because I felt that my skills or attributes would be best utilized for the Christian community in the charism of preaching.
Well, I think a friend of mine was actually, he kind of did the same thing. So you guys are a little younger than I am, but when I was in high school, there was a guy who was relatively devout Catholic. And he always flirted with the idea of going into the priesthood, and that never happened. He went to school. He's an engineer or some bullshit or whatever. But so the topic would always come up every couple of years, right? And then maybe 2 years ago, he decided, I'm going to be a monk. And it was like, shit, dude, like what? Okay. Like that's kind of out of the blue, you know, I thought you gave that up. And so he tried that for, I don't know, man, like about a year and a half. And he's not in it anymore. He's back in Houston. So I think he was in the Dominican order. I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
So I know he was out of state. Did you have to leave the state to do this?
Yeah. So just for the listeners, let me just give like a real brief outlook. Christianity obviously started 2000 years ago, Jesus Christ. And when the Roman Empire kind of adopted it as the official religion and it became mainstreamed, if you will, some of the devoted Christians didn't feel like the Christian communities were getting kind of diluted and they were losing their zeal, maybe, if
sure.
you will.
Sure.
So what they did was they left society and they call them the Desert Fathers. And these are people that started religious communities. So the idea was we are going to create a community and live in according to the teachings of Christ. So you have some of the oldest orders, one of the oldest, most renowned are the Benedictines.
Sure.
They've been around for 1500 years or so. I'm not exactly sure, maybe 1100. But the idea was to live a pure form of Christian life. But the interesting thing was, is what they found out is when they went out to the desert, they brought everything with them because they too were human, just like everybody else or whatnot. But they're just great teachings or whatnot. And then a few hundred years later, the founder of the order that I was a part of felt a need for better preachers. It was a completely different time back then. There was no cell phones. There wasn't even mail. I mean, sure. They had couriers that, traveled or whatnot, but there was no U.S. mailing system or whatnot. So there was a lot of, the priesthood was not a seminary. You didn't go to a school. It was an internship. It was an apprenticeship with another priest. And consequently, there was a lot of priests that were fairly ignorant. I think it was an eighth grade education in that time was good. Fairly ignorant, and the founder of my order found a need to create better preachers to go out and kind of combat some of the heretical beliefs that were building up in society.
Gotcha. So how long were you a part of the order?
So about 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, he sold everything he had, man, his whole life. He gave it all up, and he went in full faith, brother, man.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wish I had done it a little earlier in my life, but I can't say that I wish I didn't do it, because the experience, there's really nothing that I can think that could compare to it. Just, we wore like robes, called habits, and we went out in public, and the people that you meet, just the inspiration that you see on people's faces when they see people that are doing stuff like that was profound. And I was able to serve with the homeless population of New Orleans for 2 months.
That's awesome.
I would have never have done that had I not done that order. I mean, I would have never even, it completely changed me as a person.
Yeah. That's awesome.
For the better.
Yeah.
So
someone that's known me for 25 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say you're a pretty good clock on that. There.
I'm not gonna lie, I was so proud of Rocky when he went off and did this adventure, but damn it, I was sad I missed him the whole adventure. But luckily, he got to come back for my wedding.
Yeah, I think we kind of had a spiritual connection where we knew it wasn't gonna last forever. Like, when are you gonna come home, Rocky? I'm like, well.
So this dude comes home for my wedding, right?
Oh, wait.
He comes home for my wedding, and he's Father Rock. And everybody's like, he's one of the groomsmen. The dude never sits down the entire wedding. He doesn't eat his food. He doesn't partake in anything. He's doing cartwheels in the worm across the dance floor.
That's
needless to say, I was a tad bit starved of the people that I grew up and loved. And I didn't sit down to eat dinner at all. I just conversed with people, and
the next morning I ran into him at my dad's house, like after the wedding. Me and the newly wed wife came from downtown back out west. And I go over to my dad's house, and he rolls up in the same suit, all dressed up.
Yeah, no need to change that night.
And I was like, hey, man, what happened? He's like, oh, I somehow wound back up at your house. I was like, oh, I guess people went to my house. And he's like, last thing I remember is some beautiful bridesmaid was tucking me in bed in full clothes, and I woke up.
It was definitely an interesting experience, especially for what I was doing at the time. You have a lot of when you do something like religious life and you go back with your friends, you have a lot of, do I be a friend? Do I be a spiritual leader? Kind of toss up thing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I mean, I had a buddy who has a reputation for being, I don't think a womanizer is the best word. That's kind of rude, but it's kind of true.
Who are we talking about? Are we talking about Big Red?
No, so you can bleep this out, but his name is.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'll bleep it out.
We'll bleep it out.
All right. Yeah, let's do that, because I'm very big on respecting people's confidentiality. Yeah. You know, yeah. Honestly. And they hone that into when you do something like religious life. But yeah, you know, that night when I came back to Michael's house, he had a woman with him and Mikey. I knew they weren't Mikey. Married. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I knew they weren't married and, you know, you have to decide who you're going to be at that time. And I think that's really what Christianity is about. It's about just meeting people where they're at in the moment, you know, I mean, and not trying to be some kind of like self-righteous, judgmental person.
And I will say you balance that life out well. When Rocky would come back, he would balance the brotherhood / brother, right? Spend time with us as brothers and then also going out there, you know, teaching us something, you know, more to life, which was great. And it was great to have a spiritual leader other than a, you know, public school education leader, right? But but what would you say, and I know there's going to be a lot of things and it's going to be hard to maybe hone it down on maybe one or two, but what was the catalyst for leaving the brotherhood? Could you say the bureaucracy of it, the just the finite, just steadfast, very narrow life and standard of living, the midst of your brothers and family back home? Because you came from a very, you know, a great boisterous life with many, you know, friends. You didn't come from a solitary life, one or two friends and, you know, one family member. Is it combination of everything or?
Yeah. You know, in all honesty, it's fresh off as I am right now. It's kind of painful to talk about because when I went in, it was such a major thing. I mean, I had tears in my eyes when I was reading the mission of the order that I was joining to go out and preach the good news. That's what gospel means, good news. And I'll say that this is my experience, right? Everyone's going to have different experience in life, no matter what, even if they all do the same things. But for me, religious life was not what I thought it was going to be. And in a lot of ways, it was far better than I could have ever dreamed of. And in other ways, I was, you know, I don't want to say let down, but just kind of like, okay, this is how it is. But ultimately, yeah, you're right. No, I can't just say, oh, this one reason caused me to, you know, leave but it was just an accumulation of kind of feeling like a fish out of water in a way, like, and not just, I think, here we are, erase the state, right? There's a little bit of freedom in that. I think me personally, I needed a little bit more freedom than what I had got involved into. And I changed tremendously. I learned so much about myself. So I can't, the reasons that I joined are not the reasons that I stayed. And the reasons that I thought I might stay are not the reasons that I left. It's kind of you don't know until you go kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, you don't know until you go. So I would never want to sit down on anybody's vocation or, I mean, if you're feeling like you want to do something in your heart, go do it. Because there's a reason you're called to go do it. Do it. If it doesn't work out, that's not a failure. It just means that you went, you came, you saw, you conquered, you know, and that wasn't where you're called, but you took everything that you learned there and you're bringing it with you into the next door that you walk through. But yeah, I would say it was a accumulation of, so I took vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. That means I had nothing. I didn't own anything. Everything was shared. I got $100 a week of my own personal spending. So that's not a lot, right? I mean, sure. You just spent $30 on a pizza. You know? Did I say $100 a week?
Yeah.
I meant $100 a month. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I had $100 a month. Now, my needs were provided for me, you know, my food, my shelter and all that. But I mean, like.
But still, you're random.
You get $100, you know, so it's like, and this was in the formation. Maybe later on you can have more. But, you know, the idea is poverty is freedom. And I can I think we can probably even talk about that for a while. Maybe
that's interesting. So, yeah. So that's how the Catholic faith saw that was poverty was, I guess, freedom from just life in general.
Yeah. So the
society.
So the vows, poverty, chastity, and obedience, ultimately represent a freeing of your own spirit, you know, for God, for the people of God, or whatnot. You're giving up these primordial desires, you know, of ownership, of sexuality, of deciding what you want to do, you know, and it is freeing. It's very freeing when you're in there, but it cannot be freeing if you don't, you know, do it right, or you're not looking at it in the right light, if you will. So, I set out to do something very extreme. And I knew that. And I had an extreme experience. There was nothing went wrong. I'm very close with a lot of the brothers still. I plan on being connected with them for the rest of my life. But as far as like, I'm going to stop here by answering your question initially by saying that for me personally, I didn't see myself excelling in a future in that domain. So it's like it is very hard to do those kind of things and commit to that level of selflessness if you're not exactly sure what you're fighting for, you know, if you will. So understood. Ultimately that lack of fight kind of said, okay, maybe I need to look into other things. And it was extremely hard to part, especially after eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner with brothers, with priests, day in and day out for 3 years. I mean, it'd be hard for anybody.
Hell yeah.
So what are you getting into now?
I'm looking at a couple different things. I don't like to put the cart before the horse, if you will, but it's always been like a dream of mine to be a firefighter. So I'm looking into that. I also found out while I was in the order that I'm really good with my hands, fixing things. I didn't know that really before until I found out that a bunch of other men couldn't do it. that got me more interested in maybe looking into the electrical field. And then I always, you know, I have a degree in psychology. I have a bleeding heart for people, for understanding people, for, you know, compassion, for well-being. So I've very much considered going back for a master's in counseling, you know.
Nice.
But it's still a little bit soon. You got to just work with it, you know, mold the next scenario.
So on the firefighting thing, are you looking into joining one of the public services, or are you considering volunteer or a mixture of both?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's always been like a dream. I say it's always been when I was younger, of course, you know, everyone wants to be a firefighter when they're a young boy. But I mean, I really did. I actually volunteered at one of the local departments in my teenage years, which basically meant I put on a shirt that made me feel cool. It said junior firefighter. And I like went to the fires and like watched them put them out. Ooh, here's the best part. So it was in our district, we had every Christmas. I don't know if they still do it now. They're just doing away with everything nowadays. You know how it is. And we had a Santa Claus truck that would, you know, fire truck that would drive around during the Christmas time, go through the neighborhoods and throw candy out. So one Christmas Eve, right, it's like 3 degrees out, and we can say where we are, right? Houston, Texas?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Houston's good.
Houston, Texas. 3 degrees in Houston, Texas is like negative 50.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, we're just not, you know, with the humidity. So no one wanted to get up on the fire truck and be Santa Claus. So there I did. I volunteered. So here I am, 16 years old. Dressed up as Santa Claus on the back of a fire truck, waving to my algebra teacher and throwing candy to her.
Nice.
16-year-old Santa Claus.
So did you nicely throw it, or did you like tag her in the face?
She was a good teacher.
Okay.
But yeah, and then you know, it's funny because you're like, you know, are you going to try to do volunteer or whatnot? Well, I wish I could volunteer all my time, you know, like I did in the order. But unfortunately, if you want to be a firefighter nowadays, you pretty much have to work under some kind of government structure or situation. You know, there's not a lot of, there's still a lot of volunteer departments, like in the, you know, more forsaken lands, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, but, we used that one here. For forever.
Well, when I volunteered as a teenager, it was a volunteer fire department, but now it's a paid crew.
Correct. Now that our little town's blown up.
But
well,
yeah,
most
yeah,
fire departments are volunteer, aren't they?
Not HFD.
Well, yeah, not Houston, but I thought most of the firefighters that are in the United States are technically volunteer.
All your, pretty much all your rural ones. Any rural county, any small tiny town.
But even out here, we have West I-10. Is that still around?
Not anymore.
Oh, it's
all paid.
Okay.
Yeah, all paid.
Well, one common misconception with firefighters is that they put out fires for a living. But come on, I mean, how many fires are there really?
No, they're
really
all,
what firefighters are.
They're EMTs.
Yeah, EMTs. Yeah. So you're basically a EMT for the city.
Sure, sure.
You know, you're serving. And I was thinking about this. Would I work for the government? You know, in a sense, I would be on the government. I would be working through the government, but I'd be working for the people of the community that I live in a certain regard.
Yeah. Just you know,
and
sucking that taxpayer teat. It's okay. It happens to the best of us.
Well, and it's something we were talking about earlier is true to an extent, right? HFD, I guess, you're unlike HPD, you're truly working for the people. I mean, your job is literally just to save someone, nothing else, right?
Sure.
Your job is not to harass and ticket and enforce bullshit laws that are just there for the sake of bringing in revenue, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we're kind of stuck in the system that we're in, right? I mean, until I know we're trying to maybe affect some change. I don't know how well we're doing, but you know, we're kind of stuck in the system that we've been handed, right? So it's hard to just snap your fingers, flip the switch, hit the big red button, and make everything go private. But
I would love not to pay taxes, but I don't want to be killed or go to jail, bro. Right? So I mean, we're living in the system that we've been born into.
Yeah.
It is interesting to think about. I mean, you can understand the federal government, you can understand the state government, but then the municipal government, that's a whole another sector. You know, it's literally a government for Houston covers.
You have, it goes from federal to state to city and county. And then within city and county, you have municipal and local and precincts is part of municipal, right, Matt?
Well, I think everyone is beholden to the state, right? So state of Texas, state of Louisiana, state of Oklahoma, wherever you are.
Just different branches.
Because every city exists effectively at the pleasure of the governor. But see, I think about it the other way. So from the small side up, where we're not really touched every day by the federal government. We're not really touched every day by the state government. But we're touched every minute.
Hold on, right? Wait.
Well, we're touched every minute of every day by local government, whether it's school district, municipal utility districts, county. That's who we come in contact with the most. So I think that's where we need to make the most change is from the bottom up, right? That grassroots kind of growth.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more with that.
And you know what? Now that you say that, I mean, when you look at it, the only way the federal government really touches you is biweekly or monthly on your paycheck, right? On your income tax.
And at the end fucking of the year, FICA.
But other than that,
you know what's really... Sorry.
Keep going.
It's really funny too, because as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about like just in the legislation, the governing, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, you have a similar situation. How do you keep the world united while at the same time putting emphasis on the needs of the local
individuals? Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Christians here in Houston and Christians in, you know, the Philippines, there's completely different needs there. You know,
sure.
Completely different. You can't just reign over and say, oh, everybody do this, everybody do that. It's not going to work. You know, that's not, and that's a huge challenge. And I actually have, and I'm not like one of these people like, ooh, I'm Catholic. You know, I'm the best. I'm like, but I have a lot of respect for the Catholic ability to work with that. I mean, and they do, and they, you know, they got to make changes and they got to, you know, make sure they're appealing to the different cultures and whatnot. But it makes me think about what you're talking about how the local change is so huge and important.
Well, that's why I think communities, states, religions, whatever, that focus on the individual rather than the whole tends to succeed. If you look around the world, any small group or government or religion that promotes the individual above the whole, therefore makes the whole better, right? Because any community that usually puts the society as a whole together above the individual, well, then you're just kind of putting a general, all right, everybody has free food stamps, right? Well, what does that solve? What underlying issues resulted in people needing food stamps? You don't actually ever fix any issues within your communities to where if you actually focus on the individual, then the need for food stamps doesn't even come.
You know what? You know what's really, I hate to do it again and bring this back into religion.
No, that's why you're here, man. But look, bring it back.
It's really funny we're talking about this because a large portion of the Christian gospel, and no, I don't have all the numbers memorized, but I want to say 16 or 17 books of letters from St. Paul are letters to individual Christian communities.
Yep.
Saying like, hey, you guys, what about this? What about this? So just from like the beginning there's this focus on the individual communities or whatnot. And it wasn't until they tried to unify everything, that's when the craziness started happening of like, you know, different papacies and, you know, wars or whatever the heck was going on when they tried to unify everything. But yeah, I mean, in the gospel, St. Paul writes to individual communities, Corinthians, Colossians.
Not just saying a broad law
Philippians.
For
everybody. No, he's saying, hey, you know, this is what y'all are faced with. How about this? This is what y'all are faced with. How about this? It's really a beautiful thing in a certain way.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, and it brings it back to the individual, like you said, Mikey. I mean, if we all, you know, we've talked about it before, everybody needs to sort of secede down to the individual level, right? We need to have a million Liechtensteins where they're, you know, population one, effectively. The community that best takes care of its, you know, citizens, whatever you want to call them, is the one that empowers the individual to do what they want and not live some libertine lifestyle, right? Necessarily, but allow you to, you know, worship the way you want, make money the way you want, take care of your family the way that you see fit. That's how you avoid the food stamp problem, right? I mean, when you have, you know, just call it welfare or some social program that the federal government puts in place, it's done with the best intentions. But all they're really doing is just putting a Band-Aid on the wound, and they're taking care of the symptom, right? But the disease is still there eating away at the body. And that
what
disease,
do they say? The road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the disease is people not having freedom. I love this nod on the other end. Like, yeah, nailed it.
Thanks, Mikey.
Yeah, all right, guys, well, that's the show.
That's funny because I think about those, you're talking about food stamps and, you know, this, that. I mean, you know, the Christianity or Catholicism is recently getting criticized for being like communist, socialist or whatnot, but those are governmental terms. I mean, Christianity, what it's really about is love thy neighbor.
Well, if the individual is giving away their own riches or house or love, right, that's charity.
Yeah.
When the state takes from you and gives it away, that is communism.
That's socialism. Yeah. So yeah, you know, it's really hard to, you know, talk about these things and you know, discern them. But it's funny. It's almost sometimes, Maddie, I feel like that some of the social systems in place ostracize people in need because it's connecting them with a foreign entity, not their community.
Sure.
Right? Is it, you know, you're down and out. You're not getting connected with your community. Where did I come back to from religious side? Yeah. I came back to my community. I'm here with my friend, you know, somebody that I know, somebody that trusts me and, you know, loves me. I have a resume of love with this person right here, right? You know, even if I did something outlandish, he would have a lot of leeway, if you will, sympathy, you know, compassion. But yeah, I mean, I think you know, coming from a spiritual perspective, a lot of times when you have these central systems, they end up in the long run separating individuals in need even further from their own communities.
Do you think that's
well
design?
Fucking said?
Yeah,
yeah, that's, no, I, yeah, that's a good damn point.
I'm sorry.
Do you think that's by design?
Okay. So I think that's another thing to think about.
I don't mean to get too dark and take it all nefarious, but I mean, the government has a history of playing the parent, right? And well, taking over total control and changing the family dynamic.
Look at apartheid.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, and they have, at the end of the day, the more people that rely on the government, the stronger they get, right? So if you take people away from their local communities and have them rely on you, therefore their hand gets even stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have to contemplate is the word that we use.
But the rig doesn't speak rock. No, sorry. Yeah, the rock doesn't speak lightly.
Yeah, I'd have to. Yeah, that's back to the pathway to darkness is paved with good intentions. I don't think that covers this exactly, but I think in my personal experience, I don't have enough yet, if you will, to give more than a strike in the wind opinion on this. But I do know that there's a reason why there's Christianity in the world, brothers, because some of our brothers are not doing as they should be. So that being said, I would not be surprised if one of our brothers was conspiring against us. No, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I would be disheartened.
Yeah.
Surprised. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I mean, there I am.
There you go.
Cheers.
All right. So what's next, Mikey? Man, we did a lot on that one. I like that. Yeah, I'm glad you came on.
I mean, you know.
I'm glad he came over to watch me wash my truck.
I should have brought my truck over, damn it.
This thing is very deep. Yeah.
Oh, dude.
But
you realize this has been her the whole time, by the way.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a video of Mikey's brand new puppy just passed out on the desk in front of his microphone.
Just looking beautiful.
Bro, this was complete off topic. God damn it, man. I fucking love this dog.
So much for taking. Let me check that pizza real quick. I'll be right back.
Make sure the pizza's not burning.
Yeah, make sure the house is not on fire. So yeah, right before the podcast started, we ordered a little pizza and we gotta save a slice or two for the wife. Anytime HBW. We go out, we gotta save something for her. Oh, we gotta keep her happy, bro. That's what life's all about. I gotta keep my dog happy and my wife happy. Wife happy, one. Dog happy, two.
That's the most simple part of life, Mike. Just keep them happy.
Look at her, bro. She just rolled over on her back.
Pizza just, is good.
Jesus Christ.
Just a word of experience to the listeners. 170 degrees in the oven will not catch your pizza box on fire.
Ooh, boom. Okay. Knowledge from Erase the State.
And it's tip of the day.
Bro.
They don't want you to know that.
170 degrees is not for a pizza for a once priest.
Pizza box.
Did you have anything else for us, Matt? I wanted to bring Brother Rock on here so we could chat and start bullshitting. And because I know he had a bunch of awesome stuff to tell us from his stories and travels. But I know we're running low, bro. We got to hit the fridge up.
But, yeah, man. I don't know. I don't have too much.
You had a few things you want to talk about.
There's a lot of shit going on in the world, man. I know this is not necessarily a topical show, but I did see some funny shit that I shared with you and I shared with some folks on Twitter. Most of my circle saw it. So there was a train load, literal train load of fucking Bradley fighting vehicles that like just got left behind by some base that blocked traffic, which is like the most government thing in the history of government things to ever happen, that they just blocked traffic with a load of weaponry.
What you're forgetting is that one of our fellow brothers disconnected those carts so that way we could storm Area 51.
Likely.
Did you not get that memo?
Well, that was my first, my first instinct was like, dude, we need to find a fucking spare engine and go pick these fuckers up. Cause like, we're going to need these for the Boogaloo. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Yeah. Where was that even at? Do we know? I don't know.
Fill time. I'll find it. Yeah. Say something.
So my dog is a Malty poo. And I'm going to be completely cat.
I'm just going to level with you guys.
Oh, shit.
Let's see here. Oh. I've got this on Daily Motion.
That's one. God dang it. I'm going to call you Rock. Anytime I say other than Rock, bleep that shit out. So.
This was near.
This is what happens when you drink too many blood and honeys and mini bosses from Eureka Heights.
I was going to say, the problem is you're not drinking blood and honey. That's what I'm drinking.
You know the reason why you're drinking those? Because I found them in the corner of my garage in my wife's cooler, and they were hot for like 5 weeks.
I think it just describes me really well, blood and honey.
So here we go. It was in Marshall, Texas.
Marshall, Texas?
Yeah, so up in East Texas.
That's one for Brother Rock. God damn it. So all of my
easy.
What do you think on the civilian population having access to heavy firearms, military grade arms, since those few train carts of tanks rolled their way to Marshall, Texas?
I feel like people need to be armed with crowbars, so anytime a train blocks an intersection with tanks, they can pry the wheels to roll it further so they can get home to their communities where they can take care of the people in need.
It's a safe answer.
Let's step back from religious life. Let's step back from everything else, and let's just go into personal Rocky on that question. The question was, what do I think about individuals?
M4s, silencers, fully automatic guns,
tactical suitcase nukes.
Suitcase nukes.
You know the. I'm not gonna play the devil's advocate.
You can, bro.
No, I'm gonna
play the angel's advocate.
I'm gonna play somewhere in between that, because it's really funny. Like, so we're talking about a very serious question: the right to
form our militia.
I'm gonna make up a new word, because people make up new words every day. What do you think? Socialism? You think God came down and said, "Hey, social"? No, people made that word up. People make words up all the time. So I'm gonna make up a new thing. So it's like, I mean, that's what we do, right? We're creative individuals, right?
Oh, yeah.
Coin that word, Rocky.
What do I think about a person's right? I want to say, I'll say ultimately to. Represent themselves in a changing world. Boom. Okay. What are you going to say about that? So, what do I think about a person's right to represent themselves in a changing world? So, a changing world could mean that what are you going to do if someone's trying to take your house from you? You know, that's representing yourself in a changing world, right? So, what do I think about a person, whether they should have the means to represent themselves in a changing world or not? Well, of course, I think they should have the means to represent themselves in a changing world, right?
I mean, I like it.
Yeah, I fucking like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, take all the words out. You know, everybody wants to use words. Let's segue back to the gospel. The gospel is a transcript of words that are symbols that mean things, right? So we're going to use symbols to talk about this. And we're going to say, do I feel like the individual has the right to represent themselves, has the right to have the means to represent themselves in a changing world? And yeah, I think so, definitely.
By any fucking means necessary.
Yeah. And it's like, now here's the catch, though, Maddie and Mikey, here's the catch. Because a lot of questions, issues, problems, situations, scenarios, blah, 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 comes up even in, you know, the Catholic circle, if you will. So the issue we do have here, which is very interesting that a lot of people don't talk about, is the changing world. Okay. So we got people, oh, you can't have an assault rifle. And it's like, what is an assault rifle? And they're like, I don't really know.
No one knows. Yeah. Well, yeah. No one in the media knows. So like the general population.
The funny thing is here, talk about Christianity growing in virtue. We need to grow in virtue and be more patient because the world is changing so fast. Brothers, nuclear weapons weren't even a blip in thought ever. 50 years ago. I'm sorry. No, it was 60 years ago.
70-ish. Who's counting? 60,
70, yeah. I mean, you know, 70 years, that's one lifetime. I mean, we have archaeologists saying that the world's, is it archaeologists? I don't know the term. Saying the world's been around for hundreds of thousands.
About 5 billion years?
Whatever. Is that the term, right? That's a theory, whatever their theories are. You know, so it's like we are experiencing change at an astronomical exponential rate. And it's extremely challenging for the life of a preacher. And it's extremely challenging for the life of the citizen anywhere. You know, so do I think citizens have the right to represent, have the right to the means to represent themselves in an ever changing, in a changing world? Yes, I do. Yeah.
I like it. I like the change of the. What's that?
Well, that's a good way to look at it, right? Because yeah. I think most people make laws, most politicians and statists make laws in a static state, right?
Sure.
Everything's made in the now. Let's be honest. Our politicians aren't the brightest people. They're brilliant. They're brilliant at speaking words eloquently to a crowd of people, right? They're great salesmen, but when it comes to they're great strategists for keeping themselves in power. But when it comes to, I guess, the greater being of humanity, I don't think a single politician truly gives a shit. There may be a few, right? Like a Ron Paulish type, right? But other than that, I mean.
Yeah, he certainly does, but they're rare breeds, few and far between. Most of them, like we've talked about this before, right? It's once they get in, it's all self-preservation. They talk a good game, but you know, it's all about keeping themselves in power. They don't really give a shit about making a difference anymore if they ever did in the first place.
Because they realize life is so short, right? So
yeah,
I mean, they only have, like you said, a few decades to get a lot of money, get a lot of wealth for their children, for their seed.
I'm going to throw something wild in here.
Please do. That's what we like.
So,
Brother Rock.
I mean, I am drinking some Blood and Honey American Ale.
Ready right? Boss. You know, IPAs here.
Thanks. So,
be a sponsor.
Pizza cooking in the warm oven, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. Now, the thing is, you know, use the term politician, that's a very vague term. I guess it means like anyone who...
An elected official.
Elected official.
Yes.
I think it would be too general to say that they're not intelligent, if you will. But what we can say is, I like what Maddie was saying about the self-preservation.
You got that from me, by the way.
Oh, well.
Drops the Mikey.
Boom!
Yeah, I think it, you know, and by no means is this the same thing, but there's a little bit of an analogy here. When I went into religious life, I had a certain idea of what it was about, and when I lived it, I experienced what it was about or whatnot. And there wasn't self-preservation, but you know, you were introduced with levels of sacrifice that you hadn't thought about. So, I mean, I'm thinking about the young politician. I want to save the world. The next thing you know, they're, you know, starting their career and they got men with guns at their door. I mean, saying, hey, if you don't do this, then, you know, it's like, so who's really in power? Is it the politicians?
Oh, I believe that. Yeah. After the whole Epstein thing,
yeah.
I truly believe that once those guys get in power, once they get in office, once they make a name for themselves, yeah. I'm almost positive some people show up and say, hey, by the way, we have this text or tweet or private email or conversation from you back in the day. Oh, by the way, this slate of bills are coming up. we know you're going to vote the right way. And that's how almost every single person that comes out, so every grassroots candidate, right? Every grassroots candidate, whether it's the left or the right or the center, or even people who are outliers way off in the weeds, like a Bernie Sanders, right? Every single time any of them get into office, all of a sudden they just fold in. Everybody folds to the middle, right? Everybody just starts molding into one. That those great individuals become a part of just groupthink and group preservation.
Yeah. I think I like the term brothers. Boy, we don't have any sisters with us right now. So
we got one sister, bro.
Oh,
there we got Nala.
Yeah, she passed out though.
Yeah, it's funny. We like to talk about the second amendment, the right to bear arms.
Yes,
is second, amendment bro. The right word?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, just making sure so I don't sound like a complete idiot. But we really need freedom of speech. I think the day that those in power take over like the internet, that's going to be,
which is happening, which, you know, because
that's going to be the problem,
because freedom of speech on the internet doesn't really exist because these are private companies on private platforms, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. So that's when you get in that dicey territory, when they're blocking out everyone on the right or libertarians or anarchists, anyone who speaks against them and brings up good points or brings up good philosophies against them. They go, well, let's silence them or ban them from those platforms. And the problem is, yes, there are other platforms. You can go create your other platform. You can go hop on another platform. But at the end of the day, silencing someone on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or YouTube is like shooting someone in the head in the town square back in the day. That is the public forum. So free speech online, realistically, I don't think exists other than this, like us Skyping through the internet.
Yeah, right? But someone, even this, I mean, probably, don't forget that, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, Instagram, those are just, they're big corporations. I would argue that there's a lot of government tie in there. So are they really private? Who knows? But it really comes down to the gatekeepers that really control things on the internet, right? If you just want to register a domain name, you can't just do that. You have to go through someone. So, I don't like the alt-right. I think racism is disgusting. But, you know, there are people who are part of that movement that are white nationalists or whatever that are getting kicked off of their servers, right? So, yeah, I think it's a disgusting message. I think it's a disgusting message, but if they have a right to say it, how can they get their message out there, right? I know this is going to sound terrible. This is going to get frozen in time forever, but
I mean,
but even us, right? Like, we're hosted.
True. That's what freedom is.
Yeah. Well, our podcast is hosted by Anchor, right? What if, I don't think that anybody at Anchor listens to our podcast, but what if one of them does? And they say, holy shit, like, you know, we're all, they're a tech company, so they're probably a little bit leftist, right? So they hear us spouting some anarchist shit, and they're like, fuck, we got to get these dudes off the air right now. Okay, so we have to find somewhere else to host, right?
That's the thing that bothers me, Matt, is we want to sign, like, we're all against racism. We're all against evil. I mean, the 99% of people in the world are against, well, maybe not that much, are against hate and bigotry.
79% of all statistics are made up.
Dude,
that's that. But at the end of the day, if you don't give those people, if you don't give, say, the alt-right, those white supremacists.
I like that. Yeah. 75% of statistics
are 99. 100%, actually. It's 100%.
I was a psychology major, and it's mostly statistical. it was very disheartening. I'm sorry.
But what I would say is, if you don't give, say, the alt-right, right, these racists, a platform to speak, then how the fuck are you going to know that they're racist? I mean, let them have a platform. Right. And then when they have a platform and when they speak, you go up against them. You speak intelligently against them, right? You belittle their argument. You make them look like fools. And everybody points and laughs. But as soon as you silence anyone, no matter what they're, if it's political, religious, sadist, no matter what it is, as soon as you silence a sect, they get a lot more violent. They get a lot more stronger. And sorry, a lot more. Good Lord. Look at that English kicking in right there.
I have something great burning in me. Keep going.
No, go ahead.
I do too. So say yours.
this is burning so bad. You're talking about silence. You're talking about entities controlling services or whatnot. But hold on. Let me ask you a question, Mikey. If you want to know something, where do you go?
That evil Google.
Okay.
I don't.
Maddie, let me ask you a question. If you want to know something, you don't go to Google.
I don't go to Google.
Ever.
I go to DuckDuckGo.
Okay, well, you are an anomaly.
They don't track you. They don't track you like the Google does.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. I think we have it right there. Maddie already knows where I'm going with this. So the thing is, we're talking about power. We're talking about, you know, control. We're talking about censorship. And what we talked about before is change. And when people, you know, are formulating their definitions or whatnot, they tend to look at more historically, but presently a huge change is search engines. Yeah. Do you know how much power there is in a search engine?
Oh,
it's all the power.
It is artificial intelligence. Okay, so check this out. I don't know if it was Google or I was reading some article about somebody getting sued or questioned. I'm assuming it was Google for having biased election results in their search engine. So it's like when somebody search, who's the best candidate? That's so dumb. But we got to remember, not everyone's as bright as can be. Who's the best candidate? The search engine. You know, there's people that curate these search engines, right? These search engines are shaping the lives of everyone.
Well, and that's something about Tulsi Gabbard. So there's a leftist politician who's more on the libertarian side on when it comes to war and stuff.
Maybe. I feel whatever. Like I need to fuck her. She's a cop. That. Whatever. Fuck her.
I need to clarify. You
hear, really?
You're yeah, dude. She's got like one good position on foreign policy, and everything else is total garbage. So.
Okay, well, you know what? When I was listening to all these goddamn anarchists who are so sure of themselves, yeah. are all like, oh, yeah, Tulsi Gabbard's the best bet. So I'm like,
out of the crop of Democrats. Out of the crop of Democrats, she's probably the best one just for the foreign policy thing, so we can stop murdering innocent brown people overseas. But she's still a progressive gun grabber, welfare state, you know, typical Democrat on the rest of the
stuff. Well, she definitely did that come round two when everybody just went balls deep and fuck it, let's go pure socialism. When you had Warren and...
Yeah.
And freaking Harris and all of them and Buttigieg just going, all right, bro, like we're jumping in this sucker. The only old Joe is the only one who, and it's so sad, it's so hilarious, and I feel just like a piece of shit for saying this. He's the only one who sounded sane.
Which like, one, Biden?
Sane. Yes.
Oh, crazy he, Joe he was, Biden.
And he's insane. That's why I'm saying this. Yeah. I feel like shit for saying that. Because he'd be like, well, let's hold back near old Sanders or Gabbard. But how do we even get on this topic? I was about to roll this sucker up and sandwich
search
and
results.
Shove it in your face.
Google search results is how we got on this.
We were talking about Tulsi Gabbard and about how when – so Tulsi Gabbard is a Democrat running politician. Because keep in mind, Rock, bleep those motherfuckers out, has been –
Father Rock.
Has been in religious life for a while, so he'd miss these parts.
AKA, I'm Patrick off of SpongeBob.
But just...
Under a rock. It was a good rock, though. It was a holy one.
Just so the general public knows, the father is about 7 in, so...
No!
But just so you know, so Tulsi Gabbard is a politician running on the left, running for the Democratic Party, who in her first debate...
On the rock.
In her first debate, she did good, right?
Yeah,
she knocked the shit out of Kamala Harris, and she was the most searched presidential runner.
Candidate.
And so everybody in Google, so everybody's running to Google to search up who is Tulsi Gabbard. And then Google was suppressing, apparently, right?
I don't know.
Was not.
I don't know.
They were either knocking her down a few pages or they were suppressing that you couldn't pull her up, right? It would either tie in articles that refuted
her. But that's to Father Rock's point. I mean, what's the best way to control the narrative to get your people in power is you marginalize the candidates that you don't like.
Through algorithms. Right?
Let me segue this because this is really interesting. Because evil isn't visible right away. And what is more invisible than going to a service that has a monopoly that you don't know about?
One that says it's unbiased.
Searching it and getting results. And I'm going to tell you, yeah, 2,000 pages of results come up. Do you look through 2,000? No.
No.
You look at the first page.
Absolutely.
And every programmer knows that. And I will tell you, what controls your thoughts controls your life. And this is funny, too, because people are like, oh, why do we have to go to church once a week? It's like, well, it'd probably be good for you to go to church every day to get your thoughts in the right order. But I think once a week will work for you or whatnot. Now, that's a debatable subject, but a reason for going to church weekly to get your thoughts in order.
There you
pump
go.
Pump out all the blah, blah, blah and get, you know. This is where we're at, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm just search engines are terrifying to me in a future of the humanity, you know, way.
I don't know. All sorry. I know is Father Rock needs to come on more often.
Hell yeah! Next time I'm doing this,
you know, we care, right? I mean, that's why we're here, right? We care.
Next time I got to do this, we got to all be in the same room next time.
I told you to come over, man.
Yeah, I know.
Man, I told you Father Rock was
studio up in here, right here, Mikey.
I know.
No, I'm not Father Rock.
This is Rocky. The father is past tense.
No, brother, if you will.
Brother Rock.
Brother Rock. I like it. The man of the cloth.
The man of the cloth.
The man of the cloth. Boy, did I hear that, and boy, was I the man of the cloth. I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you what. If you want to know what awkward feels like, put on a full out robe. I'm talking Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? And go out in public. I mean, you could entertain yourself for the day just looking at all the different gawks and smiles, and it's just a whole interesting thing. But there was power in that, though. This is a segue. There is power in that. People would come up to me. I was a public figure, you know, of the church, and I definitely had power, you know. And power is not a bad thing, right? Abuse of power is a bad
thing. I don't think power is bad if you don't seek it. I think those who seek power, it's almost impossible not to be malicious with it.
All right, so words mean everything. So I would rephrase that as more as like, it's probable that those who seek power are malicious, because some, very few, do seek positions of power and authority to do good.
Well, this is how I would phrase it then. If you do things in life that deem your natural respect, so you just have works within your life and people therefore respect you and seek your advice, is more beautiful and non-malicious than you going out to do works for the sole purpose of receiving power and having people come to you.
You just unlocked the biggest paradox of my philosophical contemplation with that. Maddie, would you like to hear what that is?
Lay it on me, Father Rock.
The people that should be in power don't want it.
Boom.
No, I agree.
I thought about that in sociology 2016, 12. I don't remember.
When he was 14 years old.
Yeah, I thought it right out of the womb. The people that should be in power
don't want it.
And you know what? Oh, brothers, that's the paradox of life.
Well, how about that, fellas?
Welcome.
I think this is a great place to leave it right there.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Contemplate that one for a while.
Yeah.
That should be in power don't want it. Amen.
Yeah. We'll leave our listeners with that until the next episode. So so Mikey, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Man, that's about it. I'm happy that Brother Rock was able to bless us with his divine presence. I hope to have him back again. I'm happy to have him back in Texas. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more from him as we go forward. Forgive me for the last, what, like 5 out of 8 podcasts for not really being here. Just so everyone knows, I have been traveling like an SOB all over the place for work. And I've been out every single week. I've been flying out of town and letting old Maddie here just go solo for the most part. So
except for last week, we went 0 last week. So I've been busy too.
Yeah, this is a good boost.
It's a triple boost. This is just like we were letting you get all dried up before bam.
Yeah, there you go.
That's salvation.
There's a lot of thoughts.
But I plan on being in town. I don't plan on leaving until the week of October 10th. I got a bachelor party in Arizona I'm going to. And then that following week, I'm heading out to West Texas for some technological shindig show and tells. But other than that, I will be in town a lot lately. So apologize for not being here. For the slow releases is my fault and not Maddie's. And other than that, Brother Rock, you got anything to say before we go?
It's been a pleasure meeting you, Maddie, and speaking with you. And I hope anyone that listens to this, gather some sort of insight and some sort of blessing, and wish everybody the best as always. And,
hell yeah.
Hell Brother yeah. Rockman, thanks for coming on the show. Loyal listeners, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell your dog Nala. We'll see you next week, guys. Peace. Cross a 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky tonk filled with one night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gun so steel. A dark house space just to seal the deal. Top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.